Welcome to We Grow California with your hosts, Darcy Villery
and Darcy Burke,
a safe space to discuss water, agriculture, and what makes California grow.
We have guests from those who just drink water to those that make water policy, all passionate about the water issues that face all Californians today.
Join the conversation by liking, subscribing, sending in your questions, and submitting your request to be our guest. Let's get this conversation started.
I want to welcome everybody in. We are very excited today to have Ed Ring with us. Darcy and I were talking not too long ago just about how it would be wonderful if more people in the general public knew about water and got involved, whatever method that happens. So, Ed, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. I'm working with the California Policy Center most of the time. That's a think tank down in Southern California that works on public policy issues, and I helped found that organization in 2013. Before that, I worked for private companies and startups for about half my career. So this is something that politics, California politics in particular, have been very interesting to me, you know, as a sort of a professional for about 10 years now. And water has become just increasingly interesting as a topic to me, because I think it's one of the most important issues and really a fundamental issue in California. And also personally, you know, my wife and I, our family, we don't want to have our water rationed. So, you know, we see it as a personal issue very, very much, but also as an issue that affects the whole state economy. It's just, if you don't have abundant, affordable water, you don't have affordable housing, you don't have affordable food. Any business that uses water struggles. So it's a lot more than something that just affects the farmers.
Do you think we have a water crisis here in California?
Yes, I do. I think it's something that's manageable, but I don't think we're managing it in any way that's going to get us to a solution that's going to make people happy or help our economy.
Is it caused by a drought?
So pardon? Is it because of the drought?
Is it caused by a drought?
Well, the drought is making everything much worse. And the drought is introducing problems that, you know, if we were managing this with smart investments in water supply projects, and if we were changing some of the regulatory policies, it would be a lot easier. And when there's a drought, the weaknesses in our policies are exposed. And the drought is definitely something that, even if we were doing everything right, we would have to figure out how to cope with that. I mean, we take 5 million acre feet out of the Colorado River Aqueduct every year. And the annual flow of the Colorado River for the last several years has only been 6 million acre feet. We've been draining some of the biggest reservoirs in the world to compensate for that. And they're getting pretty low. Lake Powell and Lake Mead, you know, Arizona and Nevada need that water as well. So, you know, this is something that we have been sort of in denial about. And we've been, as a public policy matter, thinking that the entire solution is found in conservation. And that's simply not true.
Well, then I was going to say, I mean, like you said, since conservation, I agree, conservation can't solve everything. Is there something that surprised you in your research that you think our listeners would be surprised by, too, that you've been, like, something you've been working on, or some other fixes that maybe just aren't being tackled? Anything that you've come up with that you feel like people don't know about well enough yet?
You know, when we worked on an initiative to fund water supply projects, one of the things we wanted to avoid was identifying one solution. We wanted to put together a formula where any solution that increases the supply of water would be an eligible project category. We didn't pick specific projects. We defined eligible project categories. And we looked at desalination, which is very controversial, and reservoirs and surface storage, which is almost equally controversial. And then things that aren't so controversial, like wastewater recycling, which has tremendous potential, and runoff capture. But if you look at these projects and you look at the strengths and weaknesses of each category of projects, you find that the best solution is all of them. They all have certain strengths that would compensate for the weaknesses in others, given, you know, a particular set of circumstances. If we can't transport water that we're storing in aquifers or reservoirs over the Tehachapi Mountains, we had better have good wastewater treatment and desalination assets in place. So if you have a diverse set of solutions, you create the resiliency that we need. And we, you know, we're going to need that as soon as we possibly can. It's crazy when you think about what's going on in the world. I mean, everyone's supposedly worried about climate change. If you're worried about climate change, you've got to be willing to consider more ways to store some of the runoff that we are getting and start funding with some kind of sense of urgency wastewater recycling and at least approve some of these desalination plants. And the other thing in the world right now is we're moving into a global food crisis. And so for people to argue that California shouldn't be farming in the San Joaquin Valley because it's, quote, a desert when it's some of the most fertile soil in the world, and we've built this remarkable system to irrigate it, and instead of maintaining that system, they're saying, well, let's just take 2 or 3 million acres out of cultivation. And meanwhile, you know, people are starving all over the world. I mean, that's just an incredibly short-sighted and kind of myopic way to look at what we're facing globally. And I, you know, I was under the impression that our legislature was fairly enlightened and concerned about not only what's going on here in California, but what the, you know, the needs are all around the world. So that's kind of a long-winded answer, but so I hope that helps.
So Ed, you referred to an initiative, and our listeners may not know what you're referring to. You want to talk about the initiative that you chair and those efforts?
Well, sure. It's dormant right now because we weren't able to qualify for the November 2022 ballot. But we put together a tremendous group of volunteers, and we worked for about 4 months to write the initiative. And we borrowed ideas from all kinds of initiatives that came before us that were along this topic. I think one of the centerpieces, it was actually something that the teachers union came up with back in the 80s, which was let's devote, you know, and this became part of the California Constitution. 38-40% I think of the state general fund has to be spent on education. Well, a few years ago, Assemblyman Devin Mathis, who I've gotten to know pretty well, he's a moderate Republican assemblyman, he proposed in the legislature to allocate 2% of the state general fund to water supply projects. And when Christy Diener, who's with the California Water for Food and People Movement, who I've known for a few years through my journalist activities, you know, I called her up and she and I were brainstorming on how to put together a water funding initiative. And she said, you've got to talk to Devin Mathis. And as soon as I heard him, you know, say, let's do 2%, a light bulb went off, because if you do a bond, first of all, the state can afford a $50 billion bond. I know that's heresy if you're a conservative, but it's true. I have a background in public finance. And if you're spending $50 billion on water supply infrastructure, you're investing that money in something that's going to yield tremendous returns for generations. And that's a legitimate use of debt. But voters will just get, you know, very alarmed if they see a bond for $50 billion, whereas if you simply say, let's allocate 2% of the state general fund to water projects, which is $4 billion a year, voters will see it in their proper perspective and realize that this is something we ought to be able to prioritize with a mere 2% of our state general fund, with all the dividends that that would yield. So one of the things we added to that, though, was we said, well, half of that money, half of that $4 billion a year, we can use to service principal and interest on debt. And that would immediately unlock, you know, it would tie up half the money, but it would immediately unlock at current rates, $25 to $30 billion, which would mean you'd have enough money to start several major water supply projects at once. So we worked that into the initiative as well. We also prioritized funding for the projects already approved and partially funded by voters a few years back in 2014, Prop 1. So those projects would get streamlined and fully funded right away. But we also, and I really like this part of it, we put a sunset on it and we said, well, you won't be committing 2% of the general fund anymore if the new projects that we pay for are producing 5 million acre feet of water every year.
New water?
And if you...
New water. Not, yeah.
Correct. It's new water. And we also worked into that if you, demolish a dam, okay, but the yield from that dam, whatever it may have been, for example, Hetch Hetchy yields 250,000 acre feet a year. So if you want to take out Hetch Hetchy, which I would happen to support because it would probably wake up a lot of voters in San Francisco and the northern San Francisco Peninsula to how privileged they are with their water. And it would also restore a beautiful valley. I mean, there's a case to be made for demolishing Hetch Hetchy, but if you do that, you'd have to add that 250,000 acre feet to the goal. You'd have to find an offsetting project. So all of a sudden it would be 5.25 million acre feet. And we worked in, if you change the regulations on water withdrawals and say, you know what, we used to be 20% of the river and then it was 40% of the river, but now we think you need to leave 60% of the runoff in the river, you'd have to estimate how much more water that would deny farms and cities. And you would have to add that to the goal as well. And we also, and this was another heresy, but we streamlined the environmentalist regulations. We worked into this bill a revision of the California Environmental Quality Act, and we also worked into the bill a revision of the Coastal Act. And by doing that, we made it possible, if this were approved by voters, to get projects approved and constructed in years instead of decades. And finally, there's a lot of nuances, but finally, the big thing is we did adopt an all of the above criteria. So we included as eligible projects, wastewater treatment, runoff capture, aquifer recharge and recovery, surface storage, both in stream and off stream. In stream would be Hetch Hetchy, off stream would be, for example, the Sites Reservoir or San Luis, which already has been built, and also desalination. So we put that all together over 4 months with a tremendous amount of help from experts all over the state, including attorneys. And, they were working during the research phase pro bono. We did have a paid lead attorney who's an expert in constitutional law, but we had attorneys that are working with farm agencies and construction contractors and the construction unions. And they had a look at this. A lot of expert attorneys had a look at this and helped us write something that was, I think, very refined. But it was 7,000 words, but it did a lot, and it had to be that long.
So I'm going to actually tell people what it's called, because in all that explanation, you failed to mention the More Water Now initiative. So coming hopefully to a ballot near you in a future election. And I think the history is important to see how we got there. It's not that we haven't allocated money for water projects and propositions in the past. It's that money hasn't been spent that actually resulted in constructed projects. And I think that just kind of summarizes it as quickly as I can for the person listening that has no clue why this should matter to them. I don't know, Darcy, were you familiar with this initiative before we were going to bring on Ed?
No, I don't think I was. I mean, that's the hard part is I think for a lot of people in the state, right, is like what we were saying before I think we even got on is that when it's wet, nobody cares. And when it's dry, suddenly the farmers are taking all the water. And it's tough to get people to wrap their heads around, the idea that we need infrastructure, whether it's, the thing is even what I, like you mentioned San Luis and we've talked a little bit about sites. It's that that was new water. Well, now that storage, for me, because I farm in Westlands too, it's like, that's also carryover storage. That thing was never designed for that, but it's being used. And once you have the tool, it has many uses. Hopefully some you'll never use, some you'll use more frequently than you realize. And we don't have a snowpack anymore. One that we don't feel like we can depend on.
I'm not going to get on that meteorological debate with you, Darcy, but we could have that conversation later. But can you explain to people what carryover water is? Because that's a nuance.
So carryover water.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so no, it's true. It's a term that not everybody knows. There's carryover water, for instance, in Fireball or for the exchange contractors is, we get water and it's given to us and we have it on the calendar year and that's it. And we do not get it the next year. But if you're a grower in Westlands, our allocations are from March. This all follows our contracts from March 1 through the following February 28th or 29th, whatever. And the thing is that if you still have water parked there and San Luis isn't filled, then you can carry that water into your next contract year. For instance, this year our carryover is sometimes it's for a month, sometimes it's for 2 months. For this year, it's the entire year because there's no water in the system. Because it, like I said, it wasn't designed for that, but that's how we're using it now. So, and it's been useful. It's expensive, but it's been quite useful. Imagine if San Luis hadn't been built. I there's plenty of places that would be, without water right now.
I think storage is always an important part of your portfolio. It's just good water resource management. To your point, Ed, you can't conserve your way out of a drought. I would argue that the drought we have now is man-made, and that we released water based on regulatory requirements, restrictions, and endangered species versus storing that water for when we needed it because we had a very, very, very wet December. And,
That's right. I like the way you point out, Darcy, that these projects can have unanticipated benefits and can have a range of benefits. They can be used for all kinds of purposes because one of the things we were trying to explain to the environmentalists that objected to the whole idea of this initiative is this also creates options for the environment. If you're desalinating water, you aren't importing that water over the Tehachapis anymore, and all of a sudden it's water that you're splitting between ecosystems and farms, and you're not splitting it between ecosystems, farms, and cities. So you all of a sudden the equation gets smaller and there's fewer parties to spread the water between. And that's true, of course, with any source of water. And you're also right that we can't rely on the snowpack. And again, why would the environmentalists not recognize that if we're not, they're the ones most, emphatic about this. There's no more snow. I mean, there actually is snow, but there's, it's probably fair to say we can't rely on the snowpack the way we did 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So why aren't we building more off-stream reservoirs? Off-stream reservoirs are the least in terms of a negative impact. You're not choking off a river. You're just filling up a valley that's an arid valley, usually west of the delta or west of the rivers, and you're filling it up. That's what San Luis was. That's what Sites is going to be. And, it's interesting, I read up as I was researching a lot of this before and after we had the initiative project, there were 40 different locations that they evaluated before they came up with the Sites Reservoir. And then they narrowed it down to 12 very good sites. And then they narrowed it down to 4. And I have to think that all 4 of those sites was the one that was chosen. Why not develop all 4 of them? And why was Sites downsized? It's still going to be a real big reservoir. It's going to hold 1.5 million acre feet, but it was designed to hold 2 million acre feet, and it was designed to have pump storage. And, pump storage is a tremendous way to store renewable electricity, which, again, the state legislature is obsessed with going electric and going renewable. And we have no way to store all that. We're already generating surplus electricity when it's really sunny in California. So I think all of these projects have a lot of virtues that benefit everybody, including environmentalists.
So
I feel it sometimes even with the environmental side, it's tough to, I tell people from time to time, it's human activity has an environmental impact no matter what it is. And so I think a number of people who are not who are against reservoirs and projects that we're talking about, they're fine with their environmental impact, their house, their car, whatever, because it's theirs. But this, they don't quite tie into the idea that, no, this is for you too, and we can do it the right way. And I think it can be a, you know, win-win-win situation for everybody.
You're not.
I agree with you. And there's a, you know, the money that it would take to do it, Darcy, is okay. Let's say we spend an extra couple of billion dollars on a dam, but it includes a fish ladder and it includes ways to manage sediment accumulation. In other words, let's say we build green dams, you know, and we spend extra money to do it. Good. You know, this state, I mean, I'll come back to it. This state can afford to do that. This state is wasting tens and billions of dollars on projects that don't have any lasting value. They kind of come up with more and more benefits, and you know, they're acting like it's a zero-sum game. The economic dividends that you get when you build these projects justify spending a little extra on it. And that would set an example for the whole world, which is something that Californians, especially again in this progressive state legislature, are bound and determined to be. You know, they want to set an example to the world. Well, the world isn't about to impoverish themselves. All of these emerging nations have no interest in staying poor. And the only way they're not going to stay poor is if they have energy and water infrastructure that's cost effective and practical. And the best thing California can do is figure out the most optimal compromise that's going to deliver those kinds of designs and technologies to the rest of the world. And we ought to be building them right here to pioneer that stuff instead of pretending that we can conserve our way to prosperity and abundance, because we simply can't.
So I'm going to tell you right now, we're almost out of time. That went very, very fast. Right. So what?
That did go fast.
So I am going to let you know that we're going to put a link to the 15 articles that you have been writing and crafting that kind of give more insight to that, as well as a link to your new book, The Abundance Choice: Our Fight for More Water. We appreciate you having you in. I don't know if you have any last comments, Darcy.
No, I know. I want to just thank Ed for coming on. I think it's been a good conversation.
So we'll have to have you back, Ed, because I think we just touched the top of the iceberg.
Well, I'd love to come back. I mean, in that series, we talk about the failed problem, you know, the failure of California's to address this. And then we talk about the sectors that influence water policy, the farmers, the media, the environmentalists, and the unions, for example. We go through the categories of water supply infrastructure in great detail, and then try to explore the deeper issues. What do we want? Do we want abundance in our lives? You know, do we want to live in a civilization where we have that foundation? If you don't have investments in water, energy, and transportation, and if the government doesn't help pay for that basic, that's the role of government. That's like right after law and justice, it's infrastructure. And then it's all the other stuff. And we've neglected that part. If we didn't neglect that part, you know, everybody that progressives care about so much, and we all care about, you know, people who are aspiring to a middle-class lifestyle, they can't get there in California because we've made the basics so expensive. Water is the scarce water is one of the fundamental reasons that the price of food and the price of housing is going up, and that can be solved, and we could solve that.
That
with
is a
an
great
initiative.
I'm going to take that as a great way to end, is that we can solve the problem. So I'm going to thank you again, Ed, for joining us, and we will put those resources on our website, and thanks for tuning in.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to another We Grow California episode and being a part of our community. Be sure to like, subscribe, submit your questions and guest requests at ecwaterpack.com/podcast. That's ecwaterpac.com/podcast today.